offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, coming to you live from our studios at Prashanti Nilayam, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind. We are in that portion of the Afternoon Satsang series where we go back to the conversations with Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba, work compiled by Dr. Hislop, one of Swami's very ardent devotees from the United States. Very interesting conversations have been archived in the form of this book. Some are very revealing in the way of how Swami operates, how Swami has been running the organization. In fact, I think the last time when we were doing this, we came across that episode, or maybe the week before that, where he speaks of how when Swami procured some land from farmers, how the way Swami paid them and what was the rationale behind that. When Swami is speaking to some of the other devotees, when they raise questions about rituals and customs, the answers which Swami gives, all of which is giving a very deep and insightful view into Swami's message, and that is why this work is so profound. And we are at that section of the conversation which probably Arvind and myself will be able to relate to very much, because at this point he starts speaking about Swami's foray into the educational field and what Swami wishes to achieve through that. And this is, mind you, very early in that journey. This is, I think, early 1970s, when only Swami's college in Vrindavan and the college in Anantapur were functioning at that time. We're going to have some very interesting conversations, not only between Hislop and Swami. There is going to be a short conversation between Hislop and some of Swami's students, as instructed by Swami. Swami has asked Hislop to ask a few questions. But before we come to all of that, let's invite Brother Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem. And as you rightly said, this is going to be a very interesting episode for all of us, because in this conversation between the devotee and the Lord, there's also a student joining in, and we will see that. And it goes through all the kind of standard questions that a devotee might get with respect to Swami and his mission and the involvement with youngsters. So without further ado, let me begin right away with the question that Hislop asks. Hislop asks Swami, what should we do about young people to correct their character and behavior? So this is something that the elders in the Sathya Sai organization, or the elders of any other organization in the family, any unit, always have this question as to how to mould the youngsters, how to bring them up in the proper way. Of course, the proper way itself varies with each person's way of thinking and how they have been brought up. As Swami would say, munde munde matir bhinna, meaning each head has its own kind of thoughts. So what I think is the proper way may differ from what you think is the proper way. And that's why it makes sense that Hislop is trying to ask this from Swami, because what Swami gives as the proper way is the proper way as far as we are concerned. And so Swami replies, Swami says, a child is bound to touch a hot lamp until once burned. Young people are without balance and they want immediate results. For example, yesterday there was a marriage here. The young man wanted a son all at once. He did not wish to wait for 9 months. A guru, so-called guru, comes into view and the young people flock to him, hoping for quick self-realization. But once disappointed, they turn away and in the process gain some cautions and patience.
And I think, if I'm not wrong, this paragraph alone, I think we had completed last time. But it's a good thing to start off with that, because that is going to set the tone for what Swami is going to say forward, especially the question which Hislop is asking as to how you should correct the character of people. And as you rightly said, one way is that there's no better person to ask than Swami about this. And the other thing is that it's going to lead on to what Swami is doing in the efforts of trying to correct the character and guide students and youngsters in the right manner. So he asked this question, I think we discussed about this, where this impatience is probably one of the characteristics of the modern age. And even when we say modern, this was modern when our parents were probably in young, right? Mm. And it only gets worse with every passing generation. Now we see even more impatience.
Absolutely.
You know, right, you know, whether it is sharing something which we know, the moment we know something or learn something, we want to share it. The moment we achieve something, we want applause for it. Or even in the point of view of when you do something, the results, you want to see it as quickly as possible. And that's what Swami is saying. And definitely there's not going to be a person who says that I got married today, I want a child tomorrow. But Swami is referring to the absurdity in our approach to life through that example which he is giving, that because that's exactly what we do, especially in the spiritual path. We want quick results, and we want results immediately. Like, you know, there's a recent forward which is going around, you know, about a doctor saying that you eat all kinds of food which is not prescribed for the human body, too much oily, too much fatty, and all of that, and you don't pause for a moment to think, is this good for me? But when I give you a tablet, you ask me, is there any side effects? Right? That's precisely what we are doing. We don't, where we have to have that restraint and think about, we don't mind waiting endlessly when it comes to that. But when it comes to something spiritual, we want quick results, we want immediate results, which we have to be seen instantly, and, you know, completely misplaced expectations from life.
As you said, this conversation was happening decades before, and at that time they're speaking of it as the modern age with lot of impatience. Today when we look at the world, it is so filled with impatience. I feel as things have gotten easier and quicker, our patience levels have come down drastically. It is true that, you know, with one swipe of the phone or one press of a button, you can get food at your home. And when that is the case, if our food is delayed by 5 minutes, the delivery boy or whoever it is gets a pasting. In fact, many companies have a policy that if it's delayed by so much, you can actually get it free. And they must have adopted that policy because getting it on time, and on time meaning not a second late, is so important. The way it is presented is in a positive way, saying that we don't waste time, it is so important and all that. But the negative of that is, sadly, we are very impatient because we might be so strict about time when it comes to food being delivered at my home when I ordered it. But in my own things, I mean, sitting on social media just before possibly and being late for an important interview because of that, there are so many things that show that we have double standards. One standard is what we expect from others, one from our own selves. So when it comes to others, it's about time management. And when it comes to me, it's about being patient. I want others to be patient, but I myself am very impatient. And that is what Swami is referring to. Because as we know, Swami knows what is coming next. And the next few questions is definitely going to be about Swami's proposed method of transforming the world, which seems too slow to be observed. And those are the questions that Hislop will be posing. So right in the beginning itself, I think Swami is setting the premise very clearly, where he says that quick results, searching for quick results, is not a successful path to be taken. In fact, he continues by saying, a small story. A young man of very poor parents graduated with a BA, a Bachelor of Arts degree, mainly because the teachers were fed up with his many failures at the exams. So that too, he didn't get it properly. Anyway, Swami continues, his parents were now proud and said, we will find you a wife. The boy replied, I will take only a BA girl, for I am a BA. He wanted a graduate. The mother said, we cannot afford servants for a girl who will come from her room at 9 a.m. We need a wife who will help with the housework. The son replied, it is my needs that matter, not yours. Do as I wish or I will leave. The parents capitulated and secured the desired wife. The boy told his friends, I am now happiness itself. 3 days later, he said to his wife, my dear, arise now and make me coffee. She replied, my dear, I am a BA, same as you. Please arise and get coffee for me. Now the boy proclaimed to all that life had become black and all was unhappiness and misery. Thus, from total happiness to total misery, in just 3 days' time.
Right. I mean, this story, of course, has many, many dimensions to it, as we can see. One of the things is, you know, the institution of marriage itself, the change which is happening of, you know, what Swami is conveying here is from seeing the person whom we are going to get married to becomes a member of the family to seeing that it is going to be a person who is going to be my life partner. So I have the choice of what kind of a person that person must be. And that change is probably, you know, one of the characteristics of modern life. That, you know, it's my life, it's my choice, and you know, I should be given the full freedom. Whereas in the past, it was never like that. It was like the parents go out looking for a daughter-in-law. And, you know, that change has happened. And that is because Swami says the little bit of entitlement. There is this very beautiful poem. I don't know the exact words of that by Alexander Pope. He talks about knowledge. He says, shallow drinking will intoxicate the mind, and drinking deep will make you sober again. Right? So it means any half knowledge or little knowledge will make you mad. It is only when you drink deep, when you get that deep wisdom, you will be sober again. And that's precisely what happens to youngsters who are, you know, gathering little knowledge and a little information. In fact, it is in a way connected to what Swami said before about the impatience and the modern age. You know, I would often think of this. The same program which you and I do on the radio, or let's say a talk which we go and give, that 1 hour talk would have taken us about, say, 7 or 8 hours of spending in a library, if not for internet. Today, the same knowledge can be gathered and, you know, probably processed and presented with about 2-3 hours spending through the internet. So automatically the effort which goes into what you present as your knowledge has become so very less. And that is what is happening to modern people. You know, earlier, if we had an elderly person, we used to respect that person because he has lived 30, 40 years and the knowledge which he has gathered, I will never be able to match in my 15, 20 years of life. Now, what he has gathered probably in all those years, I have the arrogance that I can know it from the internet. I can just, you know, Google around and I can find out. It is empty knowledge. It is not deep understanding really. But just that information, the ability to access that information leads me to have that arrogance. And Swami, that's what he says, that when you have that arrogance, I mean, very typically he says, he's cleared BA, but even that BA, he has not cleared himself. The teachers have got fed up with him and, you know, pushed him through. And this is the arrogance which comes. You know, when half knowledge is there, always it leads to that kind of arrogance.
And I think that's why Swami says before also that once disappointed, they turn away and in the process gain some caution and patience. So that whole exercise is not as if your impatience has resulted in something. But Swami says that's also good because that will teach you.
Correct.
That will teach you that you need to be patient. That will teach you that you need to be much more than what you are thinking you are. In fact, I feel this is a problem with many of us, that honestly deep within we ourselves don't know what is it that we seek. We keep seeking different things which give us symptomatic happiness. I just now think that, oh God, the work pressure is so much, I need a vacation. I mean, I take a vacation and I come back, but I don't think things have improved. And I'm again looking forward for another vacation, or possibly I feel that my work life or my problem, which whatever it was, instead of the vacation solving the problem came and ruined the vacation also. So we are so constantly dealing with symptoms that we forget the root cause. And in order to delve deep and find the root cause, we definitely need Shraddha and Saburi. That is what Shirdi Baba would always state. And that is faith and patience. We need patience. The importance of patience can never be overstated. That is the importance of patience we need. But because we lack that, we are constantly firefighting and just dealing with the symptoms. And you solve one symptom, the next thing comes. Till the root problem is solved, your symptoms will keep appearing over and over again, how much ever you combat and battle it. That's why, you know, I love this statement that Swami would say. He would say, seek that, seeking which, you will never have to seek again. But in order to seek that, seeking which you'll never have to seek again, I feel we need extreme patience. Because first we need to find out what is that. What is that seeking which I'll never have to seek again? Because, you know, right now if Swami were to appear before me and ask, What do you want? Tell me within 10 seconds fast. I will tell something. But actually, Swami, if Swami gives me 1 minute, I'm sure that I'll be able to ask for something much better than what I instantly asked for. If Swami gives me 1 day to think over it, I'll ask for something much wiser. If I get possibly 10 days to think over it, I'll ask even something better. What Swami has given us is actually a lifetime. You know, and a lifetime that is filled with all the truths. Take your time. Take your time before you choose what is your goal in life. You know, all of us are in pursuit of happiness. We seek happiness that is permanent. But when we try seeking that permanent happiness, we try to seek it from a million things. And that is why, though we get million things in life, we are not satisfied. Swami says, spend your life, be patient, try to find out that one thing. And once we find it out, I think the purpose of life is achieved. Because we achieve what we wish, that is the state of permanent happiness. And for that, again, as I said, the importance of patience can never be overstated. It is so, so, so important that we be patient.
And absolutely, that, you know, Shraddha and Saburi, Shraddha, Swami would say, in fact, he goes on to say that eventually, when you say that you have to seek that by seeking which you have everything, the problem with all of us is, you know, I often think when we were, I think just after we graduated, we had gone to some of these schools in the villages nearby, where they would have these schools where small children would be there, you know, second to third standard. And invariably, if you go to a small classroom, the question that you will ask is the children, what do you want to be when you grow up? And, you know, most of these students will say, I want to be a police officer. I want to be a postman.
A bus driver.
And a bus driver, a truck driver, and all of these things. If you look at it, that's all they've seen. That's all their grasp of knowledge is only that much.
That's why they're fascinated.
They're fascinated by that. And at that moment, that is their goal. They're not lying. At that moment, with the limited knowledge they have, that is what they seek. And if you look at it, in every stage of life, we seek only within the limits of our own knowledge. Right? And when you talk about reverence towards parents, reverence towards elders, it is not that you don't have goals of your own. It is not that you don't have ambitions of your own. Have them, but have the humility that I may be wrong. Seek what you want to seek, but have the humility that maybe this is not the ultimate. And that is what matters even in the path of devotion. You know, when you come to Swami, most of us come seeking something, health or, you know, some kind of favor from Swami for education or whatever it is. But when you come, probably at some point, Swami will not be forthcoming in answering that prayer. And at that time, you say that, you know, this is what I want. I think that if I have this, my life will be happy, but I'm not too sure. And I'm sure that Swami knows better than me. And that is that intelligent Shraddha and Saburi which will automatically come. Knowing that I'm seeking from somebody who knows better than me and who knows what is best for me. Just like, you know, those children in that school. For them, in their idea, that was the best thing they were asking for, because they would have seen probably a police officer having and enjoying that authority which they probably crave for. In fact, that's precisely what we do. We see a rich person and say, I want that authority and I want that luxury. But Swami is saying that there's someone so much more to life if you have a little bit of patience and if you have a little bit of humility to, you know, see is there more to learn from life that will automatically lead you to that.
And actually Swami amplifies that. He says, this behavior of the young is typical because they have not been taught to respect and revere their parents. Their behavior in the spiritual direction is similar. How can there be any spiritual light until the inside is clean? Inside work is quiet inquiry and discrimination. After the inside is clean, outward disciplines may have some value. So, I mean, it's very, very evident here that despite you doing whatever sadhana for years, if you're going to come to somebody and say, how dare you talk to me like this? Do you know what? 20 years I've done this sadhana. I mean, it clearly shows it doesn't matter how much or how long you do external practices until the internal gets purified. And that's what Swami is saying. And I feel another thing that we have to keep in mind is also what Swami would say that, I mean, that comes well in the next question itself. So I think I'll go to that question, because Hislop says, young people nowadays say, how can they respect their parents when the parents engage in wrong actions? This is one thing. This is the other thing that the youngsters often feel, that I it's not that I don't respect my elders, I don't respect my seniors, but I see them doing wrong things and therefore I have lost respect for them and therefore I disobey them. And that is the question that Hislop asks Swami, and Swami's reply is so beautiful. You know, Swami says, young people do not realize how their parents worry. No matter how faulty the parents, they wish only the best for their children. At the very least, the children can honor this and also realize the sacrifice, care and love given to the child to keep it alive and give it a chance for life. These factors must be appreciated and honored, even though the parents have faults. Only by honoring the parents will the children's children honor them. A clear case of action and reaction. There are multiple points here, but I will just state one of the points from this, which is, Swami says that when you look at the elders, your parents, especially the parents, Swami is speaking with respect to parents only, but it can be extended to elders also. Swami says it's important to see the intention behind their action. Don't just look at the action and look at the intention also, because with parents, their intention, a good parent, any parent, nature has endowed parents like that, not only in humans, even among the animals. A parent is always protective of the child. A parent may do wrong, but the intention of the parent will always be to do good for the child. And Swami says, so even if you see them doing things that are wrong, don't go against, because keep in mind that their intention is for your good. Though the action might have not been so good, the intention is always for your good, and that is what you must see. This is an important difference between God and man himself, you know. We always judge people based on the results that they produce, based on what is the outcome of their action. But as we have seen, Swami is Bhava Priya. God is Bhava Priya. He always sees the intention behind an action. So though something is unsuccessful, for Swami it's a success because the intention was pure. Though something appears to be wrong, Swami consoles and, you know, even appreciates at times, because the intention behind doing that action was pure. And so Swami is trying to tell us, I feel, that we should become more like Swami. We should look at the intention behind what the elders are speaking and not just go by the fact that, hey, this is wrong, so I need not respect him.
Yeah, it's a very important aspect of what Swami would teach the students, if you look at it from the point of view of all the Samukos discourses, which in a sense you can say that those were a refresher course or an introductory course to students who come to Swami, and what Swami would expect of people who are stepping into Swami's portals, and which can be translated into what Swami was instructing as a means by which a young person can lead an ideal life. And in that, always this idea of respecting parents will always come into that. Because if you look at it, the whole of Swami's message, whether you talk of it from the point of view of, Srishti, Samashti and Parameshti, or from the view of Seva, which Swami would say, it heavily rests on the idea of gratitude. That you have received from society, you have received from the nation, you have received from nature, you have to give back in gratitude. Right? And Swami would say you have to respect your country, and that becomes patriotism. You respect your community, that becomes seva. These are all kind of inputs that you receive from them, which is not direct, right? If the parliament is making a decision, they're not making it for you alone. They're making it for the public in general. You benefit out of it. And Swami says you have to be grateful to the nation which is providing you with all of this. But in comparison, if you look at parents, they are the ones who are constantly doing it for you, right? It is, as Swami is saying, that they might be doing mistakes, but the intention, nobody has focused their well intention on you as much as parents have. And that's why Swami would say that if you cannot show gratitude to them, you will not even be able to show gratitude to God. Right? And this is like fundamental in Swami's explanation of things. And there's plenty of times, I recall that famous Chinnakatha which Swami would always narrate. Many times you've heard from Swami about the Hindi writer Premchand.
Mm.
Right? He would say that he had these two sons, and the elder son was the one who was a little arrogant. And once, I think, the mother and father are traveling somewhere, and I think en route is the college where they are studying in.
In the railway station, they come to either drop off the parents.
Right. So they lay down in the railway station so that the children can come meet the parents in the railway station. So at that time, these two boys were studying in the hostel, come to that railway station to meet their parents. And the younger son comes and falls at their feet and hugs them, and he's speaking very lovingly. The elder son is a kind of a bit aloof, and typically how, you know, a spoiled adolescent behaves, right? The mother is very casual about it. You know, she probably sees us, this guy is different from the other one. But the father is a little perturbed by this behavior of the elder son. And Swami would say that they get back into the train. The father is very thoughtful. So the mother asks, what has disturbed you? So he says that, did you see the behavior of the elder son? I'm very worried for him, he says. Because this attitude is going to take him, and is going to get him into trouble in future. Right? And the mother says, no, why are you taking this so seriously? He's after all so young, and growing up he'll be different. The father says, no, see how the younger son is behaving, see how the elder son is behaving. I'm scared for the elder son. And Swami would say, eventually the younger son becomes a magistrate, right? And the elder brother becomes a pune in the same court, right? And Swami would say that because Premchand Munshi himself was a person of such value, he knew the importance of that reverence and humility. Right? So that's why Swami would say that educational institutions...
And Swami would say, the one who saluted, all his life, and the one who refused to salute his parents had to salute every Tom, Dick and Harry all his life.
Right, I think that's the punchline, because Swami would say that if you hesitate or feel ashamed to salute your parents, then you will have to be saluting the whole world thereafter. Right? So that is the thing which Swami would say with students. And so very beautifully Swami is saying here, that you can, you know, if you have the discrimination to say that my parents are doing something wrong, use the discrimination not to follow it. Right? Don't use the discrimination to not like them or not respect them. Swami is saying that you have enough reasons to respect your parents, because even the worst of parents do so many things out of good intention. As Swami is saying, it takes so much effort to even preserve that life and give you that opportunity at life. And that is enough reason to be grateful to them, to have received that focus, attention and care and love from them.
And the next question, in fact, Hislop, I think, is very smartly going, and he asks, Swami, what if the parent says one thing and the guru says another? Whom should the child give preference to? To know the answer, we will go in and come out of a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we will look at Swami's answer.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Just before going into that break, we left you all with a very interesting question that Hislop asks Swami. He asks, Swami, if the parent says one thing and the guru says another, to which order should the child give preference? And then Swami says, the parents who give the body come before God. Hislop is surprised. He says, parents come before God, Swami? That is surprising. And then Swami clarifies, for people in the worldly sphere, that is true. For young people leading a pure spiritual life, God comes first of all. So Swami makes it very clear, saying that even a mother can be disobeyed, a father can be disobeyed, but that is only for those who have only spirituality as the sole goal in life. Because, you know, we often take these exceptional and extreme cases as our day-to-day case, you know. To disobey my mother or my father or my elders, I say that, you know, Bharata disobeyed his own mother. Vibhishana relinquished his own brother. Or Prahallada did not go along the words of his own father. But we forget the exceptional feats that these people did and the exceptional devotion and focus that they had on God. So Swami says, in that case, it's okay. Otherwise, it is not. I remember 2003 or 2004. That year, after the summer vacation had been declared, we all were sitting in Trai Vrindavan. Swami had called us for a Trai session, and in a couple of days, all different students would be leaving for their hometowns. At that point, one student asked a question from Swami. He said, Swami, I don't want to go home. I want to stay with you, but parents are forcing me to come. What should I do? Swami said, go home. He said, no, Swami, but I want to stay with you. What should I do, Swami, if parents are telling something and I want to be with Swami? They're pulling me away from Swami. Swami said that you have to pay your gratitude to your parents. So go to them, talk to them lovingly, and convince them. That is what Swami said. You know, Swami did not tell disobey them and say to hell with them and come to me. I am God. I will take care of you. Swami said, no, you have to. Out of gratitude for them, you should spend time, speak lovingly, convince them. Be firm, but be soft and polite and sweet. Let them see that. In fact, Swami would say that what Swami has done to you, that should be seen in your behavior. The parent should feel that, you know what, my child is a diamond, my child is a gem, and that is because he or she is with Bhagwan. And therefore, they should themselves encourage you to be there with Swami. And I feel that since by default, I'm speaking especially only of parents, by default parents want the best for their children, once they see that what is happening is best, whether they believe in the concept of God or not, whether they believe in Baba or not, they will send. And this is something that I hear from my sister's mother-in-law, you know. She runs a Balvikas class in Bangalore.
Mm-hmm.
And recently there was, in this month only, before the Shankranti celebrations, there was a Balvikas graduation program. And this girl, whom she was teaching Balvikas for 6 years, her father got transferred to Hyderabad. And when she went, she said the amount she missed her guru and the Balvikas class was so much that her parents from Hyderabad, they requested this, my sister's mother-in-law, whether she can continue with Balvikas classes for the children. She said, how do I do that? I'm in Bangalore, there in Hyderabad. They said, take Skype classes, but please let her complete, because she feels incomplete without that. And they said that what we have seen in the child is tremendous. We want her to attend Balvikas. And these are parents who don't believe in Swami, or they have not been, never come to know of Swami only. Whatever they know of Swami is through their daughter. And for 3 years, this girl underwent Skype classes. And finally what happened was, it was time for the graduation. And my sister's mother-in-law, my aunt, I'll call her as aunt. My auntie was telling me that it became a problem because she could not enlist her for the graduation, because they said, no, you have not taught her. This is a very unique case.
Mm-hmm.
It had to go all the way up till the All India President, and finally an exception was made. They were very impressed. They were very thrilled. And that girl was actually allowed to graduate. I know this because this girl stayed in the home above me in the building. And for the first time ever in his life, her father came here. He was very touched. He was very impressed. And he said, this is amazing. I'm so happy. I'm so proud of my daughter. And I'm so grateful to this auntie. You know, he actually bowed down and touched her feet. And this is what I was trying to emphasize, that a parent might not be a devotee. He may not even believe. But when they see good happening to the child, because they want only the goodness, they will be ready. They won't mind changing their religious belief, their spiritual concepts, everything, because they feel joy when they see the child benefiting and growing. And that is what Swami told that day in Trai also, that you don't go and fight with your parents. Try to convince them. And when Swami says try to convince them, it's not just by our words, it's through our actions. Let them see that having gone through 1 year or half year or a few weeks in the presence of Bhagwan, there is so much of transformation, so much of good that is happening. I want good for my child, so let them go. That is what Swami advised that day in Trai, and that is that, as I said, this is specifically when it comes to parents. Because the parents, as Swami says, mother's love is the closest that comes to God's love. It is so selfless that it only looks for the good of the child. And that is why here also Swami is saying, the parents come even above the guru. Because you have to show gratitude to the parent, because this is the closest you will come in life to receiving selfless love, the love from the parents. In that same Trai session, Swami also said that for the ultimate journey, when it comes to the ultimate journey, it is only God. And then Swami gave the example of Prahallada, who disobeyed the father when it came to God. And example of Bharata, who shunned away his own mother Kaikeyi when it came to his relationship with God. But the unstated statement there is that, are you at the level of Bharata and Prahallada? Are you at the level of Vibhishana? Is it that you have given up everything else and you seek only divinity? And that is what Swami is telling Hislop also here, that for young people leading a pure spiritual life, for such cases, yes, God comes first of all, but I don't think 99.9% of us fit that bill. That's why Swami says, for people in the worldly sphere, it is parents over the guru.
It's an emphasis on what Swami would otherwise say, the importance of one's swadharma, as Swami would say, or one's duty based on the situation one is placed in life, in the family one is placed in life. And even when you talk about those examples, you know, Swami would often say that Prahlada disobeyed his father.
Bharata.
The other one he would mention is Bali, who disobeyed his guru.
Guru, yes, Shukracharya.
You know, when in front of God, and Bharata and Meera, who disobeyed his husband. When there was a choice between husband and God.
Vibhishana.
Swami would say all of that. But, you know, there's one movie that Swami has seen any number of times, and we've all had the opportunity to see with Swami, it is Bhakta Prahlada. You know, if you see that, you would never in that movie, and probably that is why Swami approved of that movie so much, you would never see Prahlada as being arrogant or disrespectful of his father, in spite of his father being totally against God and he being such a great devotee. All the while, you know, and that used to be the most irritating thing about him for the father. That very, very sweetly that boy will always keep telling, no father, what you're telling is wrong, this is not right, you should pray to God, and you know, he is the one who is going to take you through this of life, ocean of life and all of that. But never once he actually was disrespectful. And that is the same portrayal of somebody like Vibhishana. Vibhishana pleads with Ravana, this is not right, this is going to take you to your ruin. And when he has done his, you know, utmost, in fact, he is banished away. He is not walking out of Ravana's court. Ravana banishes him from the thing, from the court. Same thing with Meera. You know, Meera's, as you were saying, the devotion of Meera was such that she did not hesitate to take that poison milk, even after knowing it was poison, and that could be turned into nectar, as Swami would say. That is the devotion, right? It is not, I mean, probably some of our listeners who are listening may be in that level. It is very difficult for us to say that, you know, none of us are in that level. But that is the thing with Swami. Sometimes with Swami we would see that, as you were saying, that stance which Swami would take is, no, you have to convince your parents, no, you have to tell them what it is. But you would see that for some people Swami will say, yeah, for you, you know, you can stick with this decision. You know, I will explain to your parents, you know, Swami has taken that role. It's because at the end of the day, only you can only be honest to yourself. Are you really giving that place to Swami? And end of the day, I think it goes back to what we always speak about, means versus ends. You know, if the ends are absolutely pure, the means finds a way of becoming pure by itself. And very, very small, very minute percentage of cases happens when, you know, there is a conflict between means and ends, where God is your ends and the means are completely taking you away from that, and you have to take a firm decision, as Swami is saying. For people who are absolutely focused in the Lord, then all other bondages actually fall away. And that is a different kind of relationship. That is the relationship we have to build. But till we get there, you will never go wrong in this path of giving respect to parents and elders and guru. And that is the bottom line, Swami is saying. You will never err on the side of giving more respect to your parents.
And then Hislop goes to the next question. He says, Swami, these young college students who are in Swami's college here, they have first class education, the highest examination scores, so on. And they are also building an inner character of strong morality. Will not these students become the leaders of India? Their fine education will get them positions and their strong morality will sustain them. And Swami says, this is the purpose of Swami's college. Hislop adds, then in 20-30 years, we should look for a great change in the Indian nation. And Swami says, 20 years? In 10 years. But Swami, in 10 years, they'll still be in their late 20s. People come to power in the late 30s, in their 40s and 50s maybe. And Swami says, in India, people reach positions of power and influence earlier in life. Even now, there are a number of examples throughout the nation. So this is one mini conversation within that whole conversation, which is very, very interesting, because back then itself Swami said in 10 years' time, there'll be a great change. And now we are looking at it 40 years after that. And we may be given to the doubt as to really what has there been a great revolutionary change in the country? I feel in terms, when we look at it in worldly terms also, there has been quite some change in the Indian country, and with respect to Swami students, if we look at them in some of the top industrial houses in India, and when I say top, I am talking of really the top, the biggest companies in India, in those companies in the positions of a CFO or a CEO or a managing trustee, we have students from Swami's college sitting there. We have students from Swami's college sitting in an advisory capacity to some of the most powerful and influential people in India. So it has happened, definitely in the worldly sense. But as I said, the doubt may come, because Swami said, why 20, 30 years, in 10 years it will happen. Maybe 10 years from the time Swami was referring to, this situation was not there, wherein you have Swami students as in the top industrial and other positions, political positions or positions of power and authority. That is where I think that Swami is possibly not referring to just the worldly power success. Because if it is going to be measured only in terms of worldly power and worldly success and worldly influence, then the efforts of the great yogis in the Himalayas are absolute waste, right? How can, because in the worldly sense, they seem to wield no power, no influence, nobody even knows them, they are not on any social media, nothing. And yet, they are doing something so very vital, so very important. In fact, Swami says it's for such good people alone that God descends and takes avatarhood. So, when Swami says that in 10 years itself you start seeing the changes, I think Swami is definitely referring to a kind of spiritual change. I mean, the love that the students feel towards Bhagwan, and that love when it is shared in an ambience, when it's shared in an atmosphere of the family or the community or the society, it starts bringing change at the deep root level. Not symptomatic, as we spoke about earlier, but it starts bringing in patience, it starts bringing in love, it starts bringing in satya, dharma, shanti, prema, all these noble traits, qualities, human values, they start seeping and a revolution starts building. It's possibly to that that Swami is referring.
Probably the other thing which, I mean, I was thinking of is, this may be in the early 70s and 10 years from then is the early 80s.
Hmm.
By the early 80s, I think all the institutions of Swami had Swami's students in the role of teachers in most of the campuses.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think, one more way of looking at it, because Swami had already had that, in the early years, you had Swami being the mentor for students, and of course Swami had handpicked some teachers who were ideal, who could set examples for students in that sense. But by 10 years, you had students who had learnt what Swami expects from them, and they were able to part that with students. And that itself is actually an important landmark if you look at it from 10 years. But of course, as you rightly said, it's more subtle than anything else. And in fact, I was talking to some of the students who are working in the administrative block right now. I think they're doing a survey, which probably we'll share with some of our listeners later.
Some impact analysis.
Impact analysis, of alumni impact analysis. And we've never done something as extensively as this from the university side till now. And the university itself is very surprised by what they've come up with. It's, mm-hmm. it's very, very heartening to see, as you say, some of our students in very, very important positions, more than just positions in the corporate. Some of Swami's early students of the B.Ed. course, many of them are in important positions like principals of very, very good schools, in the boards which create syllabus and write textbooks, the NCERT board and, you know, some of the school boards. These are all one of the earliest batches of Swami's B.Ed. courses, where Swami has personally, you know, imparted to them the idea of education as he sees it. And when we say that these are in important positions, they're all, the way they can impact lives is enormous. So what Hislop must have thought when he thought was going to be the impact, I think that is there to be seen now. But from Swami's point of view, the impact, as you said, is something much, much more subtle. As, you know, Swami would often say this. Some of our teachers would say once, Swami asked them, do you know why I'm spending so much time with you? Why am I giving so much of my energy? And when thousands of devotees are waiting outside, I'm giving you all this time, right? And Swami would say that, is it because your parents are rich and they can come and contribute to my mission? Is it because that you are going to take up good jobs and come back and contribute to my mission? Do you think I have any such selfish motive about my institutions about this? Swami said, no, every moment I'm spending with you, my view is on loka kalyanam. The welfare, the world will benefit by me spending time with you. And when we speak of that, it is definitely not merely a physical impact or impact in the society in that sense, but purely that pure emotions and pure thoughts, the impact that they can have is enormous. In fact, there's a very beautiful statement which Swami makes in a discourse which Swami gave after he came back from the visit to Badri.
Hmm.
Right? Swami was talking about the pilgrims who were on the way to Badri. Right? Apart from the entourage which went with Swami, Swami was saying that hundreds and hundreds of people looking so poor, coming from different backgrounds, you know, walking up that path, chanting the Lord's name. And Swami says this, when I saw those pilgrims, I knew that this country has future. The future of this country is safe, right? So that is the importance Swami gave to that bhakti, that reverence and devotion one has in one's heart. And clearly, the amount of love that Swami has spread through his presence and through his interaction with students, one can only understand how much impact, unseen subtle impact that must have made.
You know, the youth from Australia, Sydney, they're here in Prashanti now. They're on a pilgrimage and they have a kind of a sadhana camp. And one of the most bright spots in their sadhana camp was a couple of talks by Vijayamma Garu, Kupam Vijayamma,
right,
who spent her childhood years with Bhagwan in the early 1940s, late 1940s also. Amazing time. And she's in her 80s now. And yet when she speaks, you know, we had a session with her on the banks of River Chitravati just to relive the Chitravati days. And when she's narrating, when her eyes light up, you can see how the devotion and love that she has for Bhagwan, which has been kindled in her possibly 60 years back or 70 years back, is able to ignite the same spark, the same fire within all the hearts that is sitting there and witnessing it. And that is what it is, it continues. It's not like it died down there. And you know, it was so amazing because I happened to mention this. Let me just say, you know, she was just narrating an incident where she said, Swami, like the Krishna of yore, wanted everyone to make garlands from tulsi leaves. And he said that those who make the garland exactly of my size, I will gift them with Padanamaskar. And all the ladies started making. Ultimately, it so happened that Swami made the garland. Swami alone was able to make the garland, so he himself gets his Padmanabhaskar. But the thing is, she began that by saying, let me tell you some of these monkey tricks that Swami would do. It was so amazing that even as she said that, a monkey got down from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little altar there on the special, like they made a
inclusion.
A platform they have made on Chitravati. And on the platform in one corner is a shrine they have built for Swami. And in the shrine is a chair for Bhagwan. And even as she said that Swami used to do these monkey tricks, that monkey jumped onto Swami's chair, picked up the flowers, threw it in the air, and jumped off the chair and went back up. Oh. She didn't even notice. And everybody was so thrilled, you know. Amazing. And in that moment, everybody could feel that, you know, Swami in that monkey. And that was not all. She went ahead. She was narrating an incident where Swami said, all of you come along with me to Tirupati. This was possibly one of the earliest visits where Swami took an entourage along with him. So they were in four cars. And on the way, Swami's car broke down. And she said that the driver sheepishly came and said, Swami, I'm so sorry, but we have run out of petrol. And Swami said, I know that. That is why I made this car get spoiled. Car stop exactly next to this pond. And Swami said, go get water from the pond. And she said that the driver looked at Swami and he thought that it will spoil his car. He refused. He said, no, Swami. Swami said, no, go get the water. And then she said, you know, the mind is a monkey mind. Because it doubts. This driver felt that his car will get spoiled if you pour water. So he was not ready to go and get the water. And even as she makes this statement, again that monkey comes. It comes right next to her, picks up her Bisleri bottle of water, goes, opens it and starts drinking. You know, that is when she noticed it, because the monkey came right beside her and she saw and she was laughing and she said, see, the monkey is telling that don't compare me, because even I obey. When Swami told get water, the monkey came and took the water. You know, it was so thrilling for everyone. So though Swami is physically not present, and even if Swami is physically present, if the episodes being narrated are of decades before, it has that ability and power to, you know, bring back the same love, same devotion, same adoration in people even in this day. And that I feel is what Swami has been sowing throughout his physical sojourn. He's been sowing those seeds, those immortal seeds, which for hundreds and hundreds of centuries to come will remain fresh and will kindle love and devotion for God, which in turn, as Swami says, Daiva Preeti, Papa Bhiti, Sanganiti. Daiva Preeti, that love for God, is what will build fear of sin or Papa Bhiti. And that fear of sin is what will bring Sanganiti or morality in society. And I am completely convinced that it is that to which Swami is referring to. Of course, as you said, there has been an impact even in the worldly sense where we see our students occupying top positions. But this is what I think Swami is referring to, and that is something that will continue for centuries to come.
Definitely. It's not only with the devotees, even with students, you know. We've all been inspired by the stories we have heard from this, probably this time, the 1970s, when our teachers used to tell about the interaction they would have with Swami, just like how now we can go and speak to the students who are new in the campuses, and they get inspired. I mean, that is the chain which Swami started off, and you can see that it is an unbroken chain. It's like the students don't get up and say that, no, we did not get it, so we will not have that same kind of love and reverence for Swami. And you can see, even as you were saying, the youngsters who are coming now in the form of pilgrims who are coming from different countries, the love that they feel for Swami is the same. You know, love is the same thing. Devotion and love is the same thing. The experiences can be different,
but the way you relate
is the same.
In fact, when you say foreign pilgrims, she was mentioning that on Chitravati, Swami said, a day will come, you know, people from foreign countries will come. She said, we thought Swami has gone crazy. Foreign people outside this region only don't know how you... And she was saying that they would be amazed that people are coming from Chennai, and they themselves came from Kuppam. That itself was a Herculean task and a long journey. And she had tears in her eyes as she said, you know, on that very same Chitravati, there are people who are coming from down under. Australia is how far they are coming, and actually it is happening. And she could feel that fulfillment of seeing Swami's word manifest before her very eyes. And I'm sure that we too will be feeling that same fulfillment as we see Swami's plan manifest.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that can be the best explanation for this part where Swami is saying that you will see that impact. You don't have to wait 20, 30 years. Within 10 years, you will be able to see that. Probably we'll just take a short break at this point. Dear listeners, don't go away. We have 30 minutes more, and definitely there's so much more to speak about this particular interaction which is happening, which is centered around Swami's colleges and Swami's students.
Tera pyar paakar gamon ko mita kar ye kehta hai dil bar bar.
तुम भी तो हो हर नजारों में
Welcome back, dear listeners. We will continue the conversation that is going on between Swami and Hislop. And at this point in time, an interesting introduction happens because it's evident that in the interview room is also present a student. And Swami says that in India, people reach positions of power and influence earlier in life. Even now, there are a number of examples throughout the nation. Hislop asks, do these students realize their destiny and the great responsibility to the world that they will carry? And Swami says, the students say that when they grow up, they will do as Sai wills. These young men will occupy positions in every area of Indian society as the positions become open. Wherever they go, they will influence and change society for the better. Corruption and such problems will sharply diminish. Their influence cannot but express itself. Right now, 80% of the parents of the students have had their lives changed because they observed the effect of Sai on the character of their children. The parents are content. They say they will not interfere and that their children should follow the guidance of Sai. Then, pointing to a young student from Hong Kong, Swami says, this boy will speak tomorrow. And even as Swami says that, a number of students gathered around the door of Swami's dining room as he was having his evening meal. So, there Swami has outlined his slow but steady process. I think in a previous conversation also we saw this, where Swami is saying that Swami's methods might be slow but they are certain, because he says that in order to bring about an instant change, it would be easy to publicize on television and go haywire, go gaga over media, but that will bring in a change that is extremely temporary. In order to bring a sustained and permanent change, I have adopted this process. And here Swami gives us a peep into how his planning is.
I mean, even as you were telling about the Chitravati days and all of that, you know, one might wonder, you know, the avataric time is so precious and so important that, Swami, so much of your time is being spent away for few people, handful of people sitting in the, you know, on the sands of Chitravati. But the way Swami works is completely different. As you were saying, that one person who is sitting there in the Chitravati sands today can sit and speak to 100 youth. And definitely all of these 100 youth are going to carry back that inspiration and share it with so many more. The way Swami thinks of it is completely different. And Swami would often say, you know, I'm always talking about quality. I'm thinking about quality. And that is Swami's approach. And in many, many ways, you can see how we lack in this in some ways. Whenever we take up something, we're always talking about impact, the numbers, and can we spread more, can we do this more. But the way Swami looked at it was completely different. I mean, for all that we know, Swami might also have thought about the larger picture of the organization growing, more people getting touched by it. But the way Swami started it was always different. Like as Swami told in that previous portion which we came across the last time, Swami says, I always say start early, drive slowly and reach safely, and that's how I go about my work too. And that's precisely how he has done it.
You see, when we look at a nuclear reactor in which energy is produced by either fission or fusion, it all begins with one particle. One particle goes and bombards. And when that bombards, it releases two. Those two go and bombard, release four. Four releases eight. And that's what is called a fission or a fusion reaction. And in the beginning, you know, you need to keep providing those single particles which will go and bombard and produce more. So you don't start with only one particle. You release one particle, and even as it's doing its job, you release a second one, you release a third one. You start releasing. But it's not a lifelong process. Once you release a certain amount and they say that the reactor has attained criticality, it is totally self-sustaining. In fact, at some times, to ensure that it doesn't explode into a huge thing, you need to even control and pull out some particles later on. But once the reactor has started, there is no stopping it, and it goes on forever and ever and ever till the fuel runs out. Okay? So that is what is but what is most important there is not the number of particles you put in, but that particle having sufficient energy and power to go and do this bombardment. Because if the particle lacks that power, then even if we release 1,000 particles, it's not going to get a reaction started. That is why Swami would always emphasize on the quality and not the quantity. And as you said, one person who attended that Chitradi Thrai session is now able to charge 90-100 people in one session. And God knows how many people Vijay Magaru has inspired and touched with love for God. Because I feel she is that one particle that has been charged with that correct energy, and that is why Swami doesn't mind spending that much time there. So once that has started, it's about the quality, then it will be self-sustaining. You don't need at all. You can stop sending any more new. If we take that analogy directly here, the number of people who are directly interacted with Swami can become zero, which will possibly happen in 100 years' time. But it will still go on, and that is what we see, right? The number of people who have directly interacted or spoken with, say, Lord Krishna or Lord Jesus is zero. Absolute zero. And yet, I think the number of people who are aware and who have been touched by either Lord Krishna or Jesus or anybody is more today than any time back in the past. That is what it is. Therefore, when Swami says that, he is spending so much time, not when Swami says, when we see that Swami has spent so much time doing absolutely nothing, like sweet nothing, just talking, interacting, eating, going for picnics, they are not nothing. They are doing this important job of supercharging with energy so that each one becomes a potent particle which can go and start this nuclear reaction.
And talking about the idea of, what Swami mentioned the last time, it's very easy to do a campaign and, bring about revolution in that manner. In fact, Professor Venkatraman often refer to what we witnessed, I think, a few years ago in the form of the Arab Springs in different countries, where there were revolution, and most of this revolution were based on social media. The campaigns were all people gathered, spreading word through social media and all of that. And he would say that, as a revolution, it was very successful in bringing down regimes which were there for decades together and all of that. But after bringing down, most of them didn't know what to do. Right? Because the campaign of bringing that down happened in such a short time because of social media. But the understanding of how a government should be run, how a country should be run, was not backing that revolution. Right? And that is what Swami is saying. If you are going to create a revolution, each one of those particles should also be imbued with the wisdom of what needs to be done after the point of transformation or after the change has been brought in.
Hmm.
Otherwise, the change can be brought in.
Otherwise, it will lead to an explosion,
right?
If there's no control.
And most of these countries, that's what they're suffering now. They are having a vacuum in leadership because all of them know how to bring down a government, but how to build a nation, that nobody has been trained for that. And that takes a lot of effort and takes immense amount of, sincerity and giving oneself. That's what we've seen in Swami. Whatever he did, 100% of that, of himself, he gave into that. And that's what it takes to not only create a revolution, but to have a sustained impact after a revolution has been created.
And the conversation that follows now, possibly, I don't think there's much that Prem and I would like to comment on. We'll just go through and read it because it gives an idea of the kind of particles that Swami is creating. Because Hislop now looks towards a student, that student whom Swami referred to as coming from Hong Kong, and asks him, "Have you prepared your speech?" The student says, "Swami is my voice. What he says will form into words in my mouth and will be spoken." Hislop says, "You are saying that you make no speech preparation whatsoever? Surely the first idea must be in your mind so that you can get started. Tell me what you have in mind to say." And the student says, "I do not make ideas. Only by the prompting of Bhagwan who resides in my heart do ideas come to mind. He is God and there is nothing else but Him." Now Swami looks at the student and says, "Speak now." And the student says, "Swami's being is pure beauty. His eyes tell me to watch my thoughts, watch my actions, watch my words, watch my heart. His smile is like a beautiful rose whose fragrance fills the garden of my life." Then Swami stops him and asks, "How do you know Swami is God?" The student is silent. Now Swami tells Hislop, "Go ahead, ask him some questions." And then Hislop begins asking some questions. He starts by asking, How does one know that Swami is God? It is not very clear. The beautiful reply that student gives is, Swami gives a person the power to know Him.
Right, and then Hislop goes on to ask, how do you mean? And the student explains, when the three gunas are in balance, sattva, rajas and tamas, when those three qualities or characteristics are in balance with each other, so that the person is balanced, when that happens by means of discipline, devotion and duty, then Swami is pleased to give the power to know that He is God. And Hislop asks, when does that happen? At an early age or later on? The student says, age is not an important factor. The balance of one's nature is the important thing, and this is by the practice of duty, devotion and discipline. And from the conversation, you can clearly understand that, I don't know whether you can say that this is a student who has reached that balance and so he is able to know Swami, but clearly is a reflection of Swami's own words. We know that these are all directly from Swami's discourses. Because one thing is, if you and I start speaking from our experience, that one part of our whatever we share in the form of when we sit in the radio station and speak, or when we are conversing with devotees, one part of it has definitely comes from experience. Right? Swami would often say, in fact, when you're talking about a person giving a speech in front of Swami, Swami would always say that students should speak without paper, without reading out from a paper. Because Swami would say that because you're speaking from your heart and you shouldn't need any text to read out from. So one part of it comes from experience, but the other part of it is also to say things which are concurrent with what Swami says, right? Even if it is not necessarily part of your experience already. And I think that's what that student is doing by saying that this is what Swami says, that when the three gunas are in balance, automatically one is able to recognize God.
Hislop continues, what is the destiny of man? And the student says, his destiny is to realize that he is the embodiment of God. So do girls also have the same destiny? And the student answers, there may appear to be some difference, but really both are the same. When Swami is at the girls' college at Anantapur, the boys here at the Vrindavan college realize that he is omnipresent and that he is still here, even though he is at Anantapur. They know that if their devotion is strong enough, he will come back to Vrindavan. The girls are the same. They know that Swami is omnipresent and that if their devotion is strong enough, he will visit Anantapur college in his physical person. So, this is a thing that different devotees ask. I mean, does Swami have greater expectations or has given a bigger role to the boys than to the girls? All these kind of statements, you know, that boys seem to be more favored or boys seem to be given more importance and all that, is all in the worldly term and worldly sense. You know, as we have heard Bhagwan mention in multiple discourses, very clearly, especially during the Golden Jubilee birthday discourse, the sole goal of the Satya Sai Avatar or the sole goal of the Satya Sai Seva organizations or anything, any institution that Bhagwan has started, is the realization of the divinity within. And this is irrespective of caste, creed and gender too. So all the other things, as Swami would say, is akin to you spending your time constructively as you progress towards this ultimate goal. In fact, when he came to inaugurate Radio Sai Studios as well, which he did, you know, in early 2000, almost 70 years after the avatarhood, you know, as an afterthought, almost the media house has come in sharp contrast to modern day, when you see one of the first things that anybody who wants to spread the message does is to set up a media house. Swami does it in 2001, and even when 2002 he comes and inaugurates the studio, and even when he does that, he says, I have nothing to gain from this. But if you feel that you can grow spiritually, you can benefit by it, then by all means do it. So even Radio Sai, or whether the college or whether the hospital, everything has been set up so that a doctor or a patient or a teacher or a student or a media professional, different professionals, can progress towards God doing the thing what they like to do. That's all. That's all it is. So basically all our professional excellence, all these other things are, they are time pass. You know, it's like time pass. It's like what you do as a hobby. It's some recreational activity you do as you're progressing towards this ultimate goal of realizing your oneness with God. And therefore, it would be absolutely wrong to say that Swami gave more importance to the boys, or Swami gave more importance to the men, or Swami gave more importance to the students. Nothing. It all appears like that because we, yad bhavam tad bhavati, we see from our level of understanding. From a worldly point of view, that's how it is. But from an ultimate point of view, you know, when we look at the old devotees in coming, who come and tell us stories, we see that all of them are mostly women. I mean,
right.
Where are we men when it's only women? You know, that's what you feel. So it's not like that. Swami has given exactly what each being needs so that he or she progresses towards God. And that is the sole goal. That is the sole goal of everything that Bhagwan has started. Because once that unity with divinity is realized, everything is set right on its own. And therefore, when Hislop asks that, the answer is, there seems to be a difference, but there is no difference, because whether it's a boy or a girl, a man or a woman, a cat or a dog, everybody has the same destiny.
Then of course, thereafter he asks about his career and all of those things. Maybe we'll leave that for the next time, because it's a long discussion. But clearly what we can see happening here is Swami is giving Hislop a direct experience of the students who were there, right? I think when we were studying, when I was my second year or first year of post-graduation, we had this NAC committee which had come for the first time, National Accreditation, I don't know, what does the other A stand for, NAAC, which would come to each university and grade them based on the facilities and all of that. Apparently, whenever these kind of bodies go to different universities, the management is very scared about letting the students meet the committees like this.
Yeah, the National Assessment and Accreditation Council.
So when they go to universities, and even the student body looks at it as an opportunity for them to put forth their grievances, especially when a committee like this comes.
Hmm.
So when these people came to our university and they asked the management, you know, where can we go and speak to the students? Invariably how it will be done is, you know, they would have a closed door session where some students will be called in, probably the student body leader or somebody, and you interact with them. When they asked our management, where can we meet the students, they said, would you like to come to the hostel? And the committee was like taken aback by that. He said, you know, you're offering us that we can walk into the hostel, into any room and ask questions. He said, yeah, you can just go and ask. And precisely like that Swami is doing, because these are all students who are gathered around. They're generally there around for Swami's darshan. And Swami is saying, you ask any of them what you want to ask, and you will get a feel of what Swami has communicated to them, and how Swami has inspired their understanding of life. And that is the session we are in the middle of. We'll continue that next week, dear listeners.
On that note, we offer ourselves at the lotus feet of beloved Bhagwan, grateful to him for this opportunity to think of him, speak of him, and live in his love. As always, dear listeners, any of your feedback, your thoughts, your suggestions, you can definitely write to us at listener@radiosai.org. There's also a WhatsApp number to which you can send your feedback. The WhatsApp number I will give you, but before giving you that number, let me tell you that you can definitely mail us at listener@radiosai.org, because we'll go through the mail, that if anything, we will add to our conversation.
Right. If you want to send us your comments and feedback by WhatsApp, you'll have to send it to 9393-258-258.
9393-258-258.
Absolutely.
Know that it's a one-way communication there. We will be receiving your feedback in the mails, if possible. We will try to respond wherever it can. On that note, once again, offering it at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, we'll sign off with the song, on the other side of which, you'll be greeted as always by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
జన్మ నిలవాలని